Call the House Resource Committee to order. The time is about 1:10. Today is March 25th, and we have here in committee, if you can give us the roll call, please.
Representative Tate.
Here.
Representative Schnell. Representative Green.
Here.
Representative McGuire. Representative Stevens.
Here.
Representative Kapsler.
Here.
Representative Sotolo. Co-Chair Masek.
Here.
Co-Chair Kowalski.
Here.
Thank you. Today, we're going to be on teleconference with Anchorage and Matt Sue and Fairbanks. And the first bill we're going to take up today is Senate Bill 343. And then we're going to do House Bill 474, HJR 46, and House Bill 508. And so we have Senate Bill 343. And we do have a couple of letters here in support of the bill. And we have the sponsor available here to give us his testimony on Senate Bill 343. And for the record, Representative McGuire has joined us. Senator Torgerson.
Good morning, afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Senate Bill 343 responds to the Alaska Supreme Court's February 1st, 2002 ruling in Lacoste versus DEC by clarifying the meeting the best available technology requirement for oil spill contingency plans. The bill accomplishes three things. It clarifies that the 1997 negotiated rulemaking regulations, which established a three-tier approach for making best available technology determinations, is a correct interpretation of the statute. It confirms the continued validity and effect of the 1997 regulations that have been utilized in approving over 100 contingency plans since April of 1997. It affirms the continued effect of contingency plan approvals issued under the 1997 regulations and ensures that plan holders can continue to operate under those approvals. This bill does not eliminate or weaken the best available technology requirement. Some have incorrectly argued that the bill rolls back protections enacted in 1990 after the Exxon Valdez oil spill. The best available technology requirement has been part of the contingency statute since 1980, long before the Exxon Valdez spill. In 1990, the legislature amended the existing law to add rigorous oil spill response planning standards, but the legislature did not address the relationship between the planning standards and best available technology. This bill would restore the 1997 consensus criteria developed in negotiated rulemaking and have been used for making best available technology determinations for the last 5 years. Madam Chairman, that's short and sweet. But that's basically what the bill accomplishes. If there are any questions, I'll have my staff come up and answer them.
Thank you, Senator. Are there any questions for Senator Torgerson?
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much. We have here in Juneau to testify Larry Dietrich from DEC.
Madam Chair, for the record, my name is Larry Dietrich, and I'm a director of the Division of Spill Prevention and Response for the Department of Environmental Conservation. Okay, proceed.
Please.
The department is responsible for reviewing and approving oil discharge prevention and contingency plans for over 120 facilities in Alaska. These facilities include oil terminals, pipelines, exploration production facilities, tank vessels, oil barges, non-tank vessels, and the railroad. The Department of Environmental Conservation has been working with the Department of Law since the Supreme Court ruling to devise a remedy that meets the Supreme Court ruling on best available technology that's described in the contingency plans. At issue is a legislative intent for meeting the best available technology statutory requirement. The court noted that when an agency has adopted regulations under a delegation of authority from the legislature and using the process prescribed by the Administrative Procedures Act, we presume that the regulations are valid. and the review is limited to whether the regulations are consistent with and reasonably necessary to carry out the purposes of statutory provisions and whether the regulations are reasonable and not arbitrary. Following the Exxon Valdez oil spill, the legislature established what are arguably the toughest response planning standards in the world. When reviewing a contingency plan, DEC has interpreted the statute to mean that meeting Alaska's tough response planning standards also satisfies the best available technology requirement if the equipment is proven, reliable, and appropriate for its intended use and the magnitude of the spill it is addressing. This interpretation was developed through an extensive work group process when the regulations were developed in 1997. The court recognized that this approach has considerable merit and that the agency judgment in this regard deserves considerable deference, but only to the extent that the legislature actually granted DEC authority to define best available technology in terms of reliance on the response planning standards. The court has raised a rather narrow question regarding whether or not our regulatory interpretation meets the intent and lies within the limits of authority delegated by the legislature. Because best available technology was not defined by the legislature, the court has interpreted the statutory language to mean that the legislature intended to impose two separate requirements, which precludes DEC from relying on the response planning standards or performance standards established in regulations to establish the best available technology requirement. Clearly, the court in the ruling has invited the legislature to clarify their intent if they so choose. We believe it is the legislature's prerogative to clarify the intent and appreciate your efforts to expedite a solution. The department believes that any legislation should meet the following goals. First, because of the timing of the release of the court decision and the time remaining during this session, it's very important that any legislation be limited to only what is necessary to address the court ruling. There's simply not enough time to entertain other changes to the statute and do credible research and coordination with the regulated community and other stakeholders. Second, to ensure continued operation of Alaska's facilities and eliminate the cloud of uncertainty from the court ruling regarding the validity of existing plan approvals made since 1997, legislation should be passed this session. Third, the legislation must validate the existing regulations and preserve the approach for making best available technology determinations as envisioned by the 97 task force. Fourth, the legislation must sustain the same level of rigor for plan reviews as now practiced and not diminish the existing response capability. Fifth, the legislation must continue to support the ability of the department to evaluate new technologies and make best available technology findings. Senate Bill 343 meets these five goals and provides a straightforward language clarifying the legislative intent. The bill validates the best available technology approach taken by the department in the 1997 negotiated rulemaking process and affirms the continued effect of contingency plans approved by the department since 1997. We believe this language is responsive to the Supreme Court ruling and does not reduce the rigor of existing contingency plan reviews or diminish the response readiness and capability of industry. The bill also provides for the department's periodic examination of new technologies to keep Alaska in the forefront of environmental protection worldwide. In conclusion, the department supports Senate Bill 343, and I would be glad to answer any questions. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. For the record, Representative Chenault and Krutula has joined us. Are there any questions for Larry?
This is an example. When and where was the last spill that your department was involved in, and what was the best available technology you used in terms of cleanup?
Through the chair, Representative Stevens, our spills are involved almost daily, virtually in different size spills across the state. There was a larger spill last summer in Prince William Sound where a new boom was used, which we believe would be a good candidate for reviewing and making a determination of its best available technology. The boom is referred to as a current buster boom. And so that was a recent event that was a larger spill. It was a fish processor that hit the rock over there. It's been the largest refined product spill in the Sound since '89. And our recovery rate was over 50%.
Okay.
using that technology, and the Alyeska serves response capability.
Okay, Larry, I guess you're going to be in the audience if we have any more questions.
Yes, I will. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. And we have Douglas Mertz. Could you please give us your name and affiliation for the record?
Thank you. I'm Douglas Mertz. I'm here on behalf of the Prince William Sound Regional Citizens Advisory Council. The RAC is an organization of 18 communities and other entities within the area that was affected by the Exxon Valdez spill. The RCAC recognizes the need for this bill for clarification after the Supreme Court decision. We do have some real concerns, though, about the enormous amount of discretion that the rewritten bill would give DEC on how and indeed whether it implements the BAT requirement. If you look at the statute, it says over and over again, it uses the word may rather than shall over and over again. The agency may find, the department may prepare, the department may require, the department may administer and enforce previously adopted regulations. Where it can say shall, it says may. The result is DEC is vested with an enormous range of discretion. It can make the BAT requirement enormously burdensome under this bill, or it can make it a meaningless walkthrough, or anything in between. It really would have that breadth of discretion. Now, we have a fairly narrow concern within this, namely that the department truly implement the regulations that were put together by a bipartisan group in 97 to implement this. These are regulations that there is general agreement now by almost everyone are good regulations and really do the job. And if they are implemented, it'll be to the entire state's advantage. One of the parts of those regulations that was considered very important by all the people who put together that package of regulations, which was the agency, industry, environmentalists, and RCAC, is the requirement for every 5 years a conference on best available technology, an event at which the experts from industry, from government, from all sources could come together and attempt to reach a true consensus on what is best available technology. It was supposed to happen every 5 years. They missed their deadline last year to hold it. Now they've got a request in to fund out of the 470 fund, one in the upcoming fiscal year. We think that it is important that, at least in this area, that breadth of discretion in the department be narrowed by the legislature actually telling DEC, you've got to do this. Your regulations require it. You've got to do it. We've given you language that would accomplish it, and frankly, it's fairly mild language. It's not even in the mandatory sections of the bill. It's in the declaration section at the beginning. It would simply say, these regulations were put together, and they are the law just as the statute is. I think you probably all have that handout. If that bill were amended to do this, it would at the very least make it enormously difficult for the agency to write off that part of the existing regulations and essentially decline to take the best opportunity for discovering and defining what best available technology is. So we recommend that you do that. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any questions for Mr. Mertz? Representative Green?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. On page 3, it says the department shall identify the prevention and response technology, shall identify, that are subject to the best technology determinations, and then they may find that the best available technology is whatever it might be. Don't you feel that is stringent enough that they shall find that this company A is going to use the best available technology? Now, they may find that what they're using is the best, so that it would be defined that whatever that switch is the best available technology. or they may find that, no, you need a Swidget Plus. But they are going to find the best available technology.
Through the chair, Representative Green, what this says to me is that they shall come up with a declaration as to what is best available technology. It may simply be a standards-based thing, it may be something else, but it doesn't require them to go through the kind of processes that they actually already committed themselves to in those 97 regulations. Ones that actually require them to go through a particular process to examine what's out there and make a fact-specific finding. That's what we'd like to see tightened up here, either through making those MAs mandatory or through the milder method that we have suggested of simply referring to the regulations and the declarations so that it is clear that those regulations, those processes, are part of what is required.
Do you have a follow-up for Representative Green?
No, I guess it's just in the interpretation of how that's written. Could you give an example of what you would suggest, maybe just a picture word of, a word picture of a situation and why this needs to be tightened?
The worst case scenario from our point of view is if the agency decided it simply didn't have the manpower or the funding or something else to do an actual examination in the field of what exists worldwide in the way of technology, including new things that are happening all the time. So it decided not to do this five-year re-examination through a conference or anything else, but simply said, entities, you present your contingency plans and we'll look at them to see whether in fact you can clean up so many gallons in so many hours, and we're not even going to look at the specific technology and compare it to what else is out there in the rest of the world in the way of evolving technology. So instead of being a moving standard that improves as technology improves, it would be one that is fixed forever until they ever decide we've got to get out there and re-examine what exists in the world.
Representative Green.
Well, thank you, Madam Chairman. I'm looking at it a completely different way. If they have looked at a C plan and have agreed that the equipment that is available is the best available technology, and at that time, over in some remote area, they're utilizing a special bug that they've just developed, and they didn't cover that, but it says they will. So does that mean then that DEC is derelict in their duty?
I don't think so,
Isn't that in fact what you're saying? On one hand, you're saying you're concerned that they won't stay abreast of current technology. But, well, there may be some extenuating circumstances, and I think that's exactly what this bill says. They are going to stay abreast of technology to the best of their ability, and they may not have the last word. Yesterday, they just came out with something in China, and so they didn't know that. And so they passed an acceptable C plan. My concern is that if you say will, they're almost always, as long as there's going to be a progression of better equipment, and we've seen that, certainly. I saw it in my other life, and I see it continually now. They'll never, ever be able to stay abreast of everything.
Through the chair, I think the beauty of referring to the 97 regulations is that they then give you a methodology for reassessing periodically every 5 years, so that some judge can't come along and say, this new technology happened last month, therefore you must incorporate it in your C-plan approvals now.
Well, again, I think we could get into semantics and maybe a debate as to what the attitude of the Supreme Court was, but I think what they just said was, we need some definition. This gives a definition. I think the Supreme Court says, okay, that'll be fine, as long as we know that there is going to be a definition, but But if you don't address it, which this says that they will, and once they have, then the Supreme Court's going to say, okay, you've addressed it. So I guess we have a difference of opinion, but I think that if you nail that too tight, you're almost determined to fail.
Well, that's why we are not advocating nailing it too tight, neither tying the requirement to specific technology, nor making the so many shalls and mandatories that somebody can come along, as Mr. Lakish did, and claim that because there is certain new technology out there right now, whether it was developed a month ago or 5 years ago, that the new technology must be incorporated in, and then make that pitch to the courts. I think by referring to the regulations, including the five-year conferences, then I think a reasonable judge would have to say their requirement is to do a grand reexamination every 5 years, not every month.
And you're concerned that the May will allow them to not do it?
If it isn't coupled with a reference to the regulations, an affirmation that indeed the process in those regulations is what is intended.
So, one last point.
Follow up, Representative Green.
It's my opinion, or at least it's the way I understand law, that regulations are an advent after statute has been determined, not the other way around.
Representative Green, you do have a point, and I think trying to fix this problem is better off by doing it with statutes rather than going by regulation. And I agree. Are there any other questions for Mr. Mayor, Representative Petula?
Madam Chair, how often has the conference been held about technology, and how long have the regulations been in place?
Well, they were created in 97. The first five-year one should have occurred in the fiscal year a year ago.
And where are you at in the process of getting a conference on that?
DEC and the industry are supporting it, and there is a component in the governor's CIP budget for seed money for it for the coming fiscal year. And as I understand it, the anticipation is that industry would also provide the experts and some money, and there may well be funding from other sources as well. So it's, the planning is very much underway.
When was the last time the response standard was looked at in statute? Was it right after Exxon Valdez? Is that the last time we've had a response standard? And do you feel comfortable, does the RAC Act feel comfortable that, you know, by overturning the case and saying, if you meet the response standard, you are best available technology, that really meets what we need to be doing in Alaska?
No, and indeed, as RACAC has been very much involved in examining sea plans and examining, at least in Prince William Sound, actual capabilities for cleanup, there has been a good deal of controversy and concern about A, meeting those performance standards, but B, whether those haven't become outdated since the Exxon Valdez spill and the legislation immediately after it. It is an evolving technology, and we, with those performance standards in place, we are at a juncture where the technology is very rapidly outstripping what was put in place back then.
Follow up. Can you give me any examples of that? Is there technology that you're aware of right now that the state isn't using that you think would be better?
No, I can't. Sorry, I'm not.
But instead of changing the current methodology, you're satisfied to accept just mentioning that there has to be a conference right in the bill. Is that right?
It's a middle ground. It would be folly for the legislature itself to either set every year new performance standards or for it to declare what the best available technology is. So somewhere, somehow, you do have to leave it to the agency that has the expertise to decide some of these things. It's DEC, of course. On the other hand, if you give them complete discretion and don't require updating periodically, then there's the very real risk that indeed nothing will happen in the way of updating and reexamining as time goes on. So it's a, I think, a sensible middle ground to do it this way.
Thank you. Are there any other questions? Co-Chair Scalzi.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a comment. The RCACs are the watchdog group for the industry, and I think that the compliance standards that the industry is under and the overview that DEC has is certainly also watched and participated in by your organization, isn't it? So don't you think that there's enough there without further mandatory requirements on legislative intent?
Well, the watchdog function that the Prince William Sound RCAC and its sister organization at Cook Inlet perform, they're a very valuable function, but they are not regulatory agencies and have no authority to make anything happen, as we well know. It's really only DEC and, to some extent, the federal authorities who can do that.
If I can continue, you're correct. However, you are better actually at knowing where a problem in a situation may occur than the legislature is. I mean, we are we value the agencies and agencies like yours to help us know that the industry is keeping up with certain standards. So I guess what I'm saying is that we hope to rely on the input that you give us every year and continue to do so. And I don't know if it's needed that we actually have DEC add regulations that might be unnecessary, is what I'm thinking. I think relying on you is certainly better than perhaps some of the agencies. So anyway, that's just my comment, Madam Chair. Thank you.
Well, thank you for your testimony.
Thank you.
And next we have Marilyn Crockett.
Good afternoon. My name is Marilyn Crockett. I'm the Deputy Director of the Alaska Oil and Gas Association, or AOGA. AOGA's members, we have 19 member companies, and we represent all of the producers in state, the three in-state refiners, Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, and one other crude oil company. And all of our members, because of the nature of their operations, are required to have oil spill discharge and contingency plans in place. So clearly we have a very vested interest in resolution of this issue. As you've heard, the Alaska Supreme Court on February 1st determined that it was unable to find the legislative intent it was looking for in making a decision about whether the regulations that DEC had promulgated following the stakeholder process, in fact, met what the intent of the legislature was when the bill was passed. AOGA participated in that stakeholder process along with other public interest groups, the RCACs, local municipalities, and utilities. And that process began in 1996, and the regulations were adopted by the department in 1997 after the group reached agreement on what those regulations should contain. One of the two of the sections of the regulations are the two, in fact, that the Supreme Court has thrown out, K1 and K2, dealing with BAT, meeting the response planning standard and the prevention standards. One of the other provisions you've heard from Mr. Mertz about previously is the BAT conference. And again, he's correct. Industry does support that conference. We supported the regulations that we worked with the stakeholder group on, and we support the holding of that conference, which should be held this year. The regulations were adopted in 2002 is the five-year time frame for that. Unfortunately, this decision has placed everyone, AOGA's members and the public and DEC, in a very tenuous position. Because those two provisions are not on the books at this time, the department is not able to approve new contingency plans that are coming in the door nor are they able to process in a timely fashion the renewals which are coming in the door. Fee plans have to be renewed every 3 years, and at the time of renewal, they must include the best available technology that's proven reliable and appropriate for whatever that activity is. The court decision also was very limited in its scope, and it acknowledged that the legislature had vested considerable authority to the department in making these determinations. They simply could not make the link that two sections of the regulations provided. One of the things that we'd like to emphasize to you today is AOGA's strong support for the bill as it reads today. We are not at all pursuing any diminishment of the department's authority, nor, in fact, would we support any diminishment of their authority at this time. Our objective in encouraging you to pass this bill is to simply remove the obstacle that we're faced with today because of the Supreme Court decision. So what we're hoping is that we'll simply get a validation of the regulations which were developed through the stakeholder process. It is a time-critical factor for industry. There are some projects which are very close to getting their final approvals for all of their permits, and they are unable to get to reach that final approval stage because of these two provisions being removed. So we would encourage you to pass the bill today. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Marilyn. Representative McGuire.
Thank you. Marilyn, question for you. How do you respond to the concerns just raised before you? You say AOGA supports the holding of the conference to go ahead and determine those best available technologies, and certainly it was part of the regs. How do you respond to the concern that there needs to be more reference to that particular conference in our statute as opposed to the regs? How do you respond to that?
Through the chair, Representative McGuire, we don't believe that the bill needs to be amended to include that specific provision. Clearly, it is in the regulations. I suppose that the entire set of regulations could be included in the bill if necessary to make everyone more comfortable, but that does not seem to us to be the prudent thing to do. It's in regulation. The department has obviously the regulations in place governing how they make these determinations, and we don't believe that at this time that amendment is necessary. The one that's been suggested is to the finding section of the bill, obviously, and again, we are very concerned about the timing for this piece of legislation. It's absolutely critical that it pass as soon as possible.
Are there any other questions for Marilyn? Seeing none, thank you for your testimony. Then we have on teleconference in Anchorage. Is there Breck Covison?
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the opportunity to testify. For the record, my name is Breck Tostevin. I'm an Assistant Attorney General in the Alaska Department of Law's Environmental Section. And I'd like to cover two topics today in my testimony. The first is the reasoning and effect of the Alaska Supreme Court's recent decision concerning the best available technology requirement for oil spill contingency plans. And the second is how this legislation responds to the Supreme Court's decision in a focused and measured way. The legislation before you today, Senate Bill 343, seeks to clarify the statutory requirement that oil spill contingency plans use best available technology in light of the Alaska Supreme Court's ruling in the Lockish versus DEC case. The best available technology, or BAT requirement, has been in place since 1980 for response equipment that are used in sea plans, and because of the addition of oil spill prevention to the sea plan statute in 1990, the VAT requirement became applicable to prevention equipment at that time. In addition, the 1990 amendments added the rigorous oil spill response planning standards to the sea plan statute. But at that point, the legislature did not address the relationship between the planning standard and the VAT requirement. In its recent ruling, the court found two parts of DEC's regulatory criteria for determining whether an oil discharge prevention contingency plan uses DAT to be inconsistent with statute. These regulatory criteria were developed as part of a negotiated rulemaking in 1997 and that included numerous stakeholders from throughout the state with a broad range of interests. In the Lochish case, the Alaska Supreme Court was confronted with a general challenge to these regulations. The court's ruling was a narrow legal decision which focused on the language of the regulations as opposed to a technological determination of whether any particular piece of equipment or technology used in the seed plant is indeed best available. In finding parts of the regulations inconsistent with the statute, the court relied upon the dictionary definition of the term best and concluded that in the absence of legislative history to the contrary, the BAT regulations could not rely on the stringent response planning standards for oil spill response technologies or could not rely on performance standards that had been set forth in regulation for determining BAT for prevention technologies. The Alaska Supreme Court concluded that while reliance on performance standards for determining BAT had considerable theoretical merit and had been used in other federal environmental statutes in lieu of a one-size-fits-all technological rule, the absence of specific legislative history on the interplay between these standards and the BAT requirement led the court to the conclusion that the criteria were invalid with the statute. Now, given the Alaska Supreme Court's ruling overturning the 1997 work group's use of the response planning standards and the prevention performance standards, the BAT statutory requirement is ripe for legislative clarification. The legislation before you today would restore the regulatory criteria adopted in the 1997 negotiated rulemaking that has been used in approving over 100 seed plans since April of 1997. This legislation does not weaken the best available technology requirement, but rather is an effort to restore the consensus criteria that have been used for making BAT determinations for the last 5 years, criteria that have resulted in major improvements in oil spill prevention and response. Senate Bill 343 accomplishes three things. It clarifies that the 1997 negotiated rulemaking regulations that establish a three-tier approach for making BAT determinations is a permissible interpretation of the statute. Second, it affirms the continued validity and effect of the 1997 regulation. If SB 343 is enacted, DEC would not be required to revise its BAT regulation. And third and finally, the legislation would affirm the continued effect of the contingency plan approvals issued under the 1997 regulations and would ensure that plan holders could continue to operate under those approvals. I would be happy to respond to any questions the chair or members of the committee may have. Thank you.
Well, thank you. Are there any questions for Rick? There are no questions. Testimony. Oh, Representative Crotula.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Hi, Brack. This is Beth Crotula. When the department goes through right now trying to make a determination on best available technology, are you only looking at the performance standard? I mean, are you just measuring it against whether the equipment can do the pickup and containment or whatever is required, or are you also doing, and maybe Larry may be the better person to ask this, doing some work at trying to make a determination of, you know, what's available and what's reasonably, what could you reasonably expect companies to have available? Do you do any of the second? I'm sorry I didn't look thoroughly through the regs.
Representative Crotula, through the chair, For response equipment, the regulation requires that if it's a technology that meets the response planning standard, it also must be proven reliable and appropriate for its intended use. For example, if it's being used for near-shore skimming, it has to be reliable and appropriate for that purpose. And it also has to be reliable and appropriate for the magnitude of the spill it's addressing and the type of spill it's addressing. So it isn't simply meeting the response planning standards. There's the additional criteria that are involved in making that determination.
And is that in the statute or is that in regulation?
That's in the 97 regulations.
Okay. Thank you. Do you have any other regulations that are along those same lines that require you not just to meet a performance standard?
Well, the regulations also call for the review and the five-year conference as well to review breakthrough technologies and if DEC finds that there's a new technology out there, can make a finding with respect to that technology.
Right.
And that would be picked up in the next renewal of the contingency plan process.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. We're going to go to Cordova. Sue Oslin. Cordova, are you online?
Yes, I am. This is Sue Oslin, Executive Director of Cordova District Fishermen United. CDFU fought long and hard following the Exxon Valdez spill to assure that the oil companies and the state work to ensure that oil spill contingency plans are the best possible to prevent a repeat of 1989. The best available technology is one of the most crucial elements within prevention and response contingency planning, and CDFU supports the proposed amendment language submitted to you by Prince William Sound RCAC and strongly encourage you to include periodic best available technology conferences consistent with the 97 regulations as negotiated by stakeholders, of which we were one, when and if you move the bill. And I'd like to simply state that, in our opinion, compliance with the performance standard and adherence to best available technology are two very significantly different things. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any questions for Sue? Okay, thank you for your testimony. We're going to go to Fairbanks. We have online Ross Cohen.
Yes, thank you. Good afternoon. My name is Ross Cohen, and I'm with the Alaska Forum for Environmental Responsibility, a nonprofit group dedicating to holding industry and government accountable to environmental laws and regulations. I have, in testimony before previous committees, where Senate Bill 343 was referred, testified in opposition to the bill. And while I remain opposed to the bill's intent, and while I believe that ADEC should promulgate regulations that comply with, not circumvent, the Supreme Court's decision, and while I also believe that this legislature should withhold action while ADEC has opened a public comment period on just such regulation changes, I nevertheless understand that this bill is well on its way to passing. Therefore, I wish only to state to this committee, and indeed the legislature as a whole, that I fully endorse the holding of an ADEC-sponsored conference on BAT. Such a conference, to be held every 5 years, was stipulated in the 1997 regs. It has never been held, and this conference, as the committee has heard, is supported by both the RCAC and AOGA. I strongly encourage you to provide for such a conference as you consider this legislation. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any questions for Ross? Representative Krutula.
Thanks. This is Beth Krutula, and I just want to understand, is the theory behind this, because the bill is fairly assured of going through, that we're better off having a conference for sure so that everyone can find out what the information is and how science has progressed, and getting some commitment on the record, not just in regs at this point, which haven't been followed? Is that the theory?
Through the chair, Representative Krutula, if I had my druthers, I'd like to see this bill go down, but I'm not naive enough to think that's going to happen. So, yes, you're absolutely correct. Given the present circumstances, I'd like to see a conference.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. We're going to go back to Anchorage. Gary Carlson.
Madam Chair, members of the House Resources Committee, my name is Gary Carlson, and I am Senior Vice President for Forest Oil Corporation. Forest Oil holds leases on approximately 200,000 acres, primarily in the Cook Inlet, and a license for an additional 200,000 net acres in the Copper River Basin. And we are major investors in resource development in Alaska. I would like to take this opportunity to go on record to present Forest Oil's case for a timely passage of Senate Bill 343. We are one of the companies caught in the middle of this dilemma caused by the recent Supreme Court ruling. First of all, let me emphasize Forest Oil supports the position of AOGA in this matter, and therefore I will not repeat AOGA's points. We also support ADEC prior testimony and the Attorney General's analysis of the bill. The state of Alaska has one of the most comprehensive oil spill prevention and response requirements in the world. Forest Oil's position is that Senate Bill 343 is now necessary to make clear the legislative intent and the Department of Environmental Conservation's practices and regulations currently in place. In Forest Oil's case, the readout shoal development phase, which includes facility and pipeline installation and more than 300 jobs this summer, is in jeopardy without quick resolution of this problem. Forest Oil has built BAT into all aspects of readout development, including state-of-the-art leak detection, materials of construction, facility siting, and innovative pipeline design. After over 3 years in the permit process, we anticipated having all the required state and federal permits in place by early April. The current BAT requirements have changed the permitting rules in the middle of the process. As you are aware, Alaska offers a limited construction season, therefore getting Senate Bill 343 on the books within the next few weeks is critical to the commercial success of this project. The project is not only critical to Forest Oil's Alaska operation, but the industry as a whole. We encourage this committee, the legislature, and the administration to act as quickly as possible to enact 343 as is now written. Thank you for the opportunity to testify on this important legislation.
Okay, thank you for your testimony. Are there any questions for Gary today? We're going to move on to Tom Lokosch.
That's Tom Lokosch, Madam Chairwoman.
Okay, if you could give us your name again and give us your affiliation for the record.
Yeah, my name is Tom Lokosch. That's spelled L-A-K-O-S-H. My phone number, email address, and email is on the sign-up sheet. I am the Lokosch in Lokosch versus DEC in the case that you're trying to address at this point. And I'd like to adopt and incorporate my testimony before the Senate Resources Committee and the House Oil and Gas Subcommittee into the present testimony to your committee, if by your leave, Madam Chairwoman. I'd like to discuss offhand some of the problems and why I was compelled to pursue litigation on this matter in the first place. It's because in 1995, when the Prince William Sound oil spill contingency plans were approved, there were several communities and affected individuals and user groups that had appealed the decision of that contingency plan, one of the basis is being that the department failed to adequately consider best available technology as it was understood then. Subsequently, during the litigation process, the administrative appeal process, DEC decided to change the regulation because it knew it couldn't withstand the strict scrutiny of the law at that point in time. Now, DEC has again failed to apply the law as it was written in 1980. This is not the 11th legislature. This is not the 16th legislature that passed the same best available technology language in 1980. It's not even the 20th legislature that was in session during the time that these new regulations were written. And it's because DEC has failed to implement any form, manner, or shape of the regulations that have been compelled to pursue this issue at every turn. And this is just one of the turns, and there will be several more. As has been discussed previously, there was the 1997 regulation demanded that the agency substitute this technology conference and subsequent analysis of breakthrough technology, the DEC trying to dodge its duty. Now, there are several members of this committee that live in districts where there are severe problems with dealing with hazardous substance spills, particularly oil spills. You might want to ask Forest Energy if it can respond and cook inlet ice from its new development. And that may stop its ability to be approved under the reliable and appropriate standard, because there is truly no reliable and appropriate method of removing oil from ice-bearing waters at this point in time, although there are some scant references to it in various contingency plans. Under none of them does DEC have the delusion that any of these permittees can respond in broken rivers. And in fact, Susan Harvey lost her job over this same type of political fix to a technological problem. All of the representatives here from the Cook Inlet area, from Homer, from Kenai, from Anchorage, all well know that when they look out the window in the winter, there's floating ice. There is very little capability and certainly no ability to meet the response planning standards under those conditions. In Prince William Sound, which I'm more familiar with, the ability of those huge barges and all of those millions and millions of dollars worth of equipment are unable to respond in seas higher than 6 foot because of the fact that they have to operate on deck. They poorly design their systems to require people working on deck, and there is a limit to that. There are some design features and some of their equipment that show a great deal of promise for expanding the ability to work in these more severe Alaska conditions. And that's what the BAT statute was clearly supposed to improve, the ability to protect Alaska's resources around the clock, because it's not constitutionally permissible to put an ultra-hazardous activity in the middle of everybody else's reasonable concurrent uses without the ability to mitigate the damage that hazardous activity could create. There is no difference between an oil spill and a fish trap, and our Constitution outlawed fish traps because they didn't provide for sustained yield and reasonable concurrent use. And neither does oil spill contingency plans that are mere paper tigers that do not employ the best technology designed to operate in Alaska conditions. So I beg this committee, which has done the most research and most inquiry to date of all the committees that have heard this, to go back through the testimony, to take time to look at what the response problems are in your particular district, and include in this bill a requirement for DEC to examine improvements in the ability to address those problematic spill response situations. That is what BAT is needed for. There is a big gap in the ability to recover spills under severe Alaska conditions. The spill equipment we presently have has been stagnant for some time, was never designed to operate under an Alaska conditions in the first instance. Many of the Northern European countries have taken leaps and bounds past our systems in the last several years. And this inability of DEC to properly determine BAT goes back 21 years. There's 21 years of accumulated damage to Alaskan citizens from DEC's dereliction of duty. We could have had these problems of response to spills in ice, the response to spills in high seas, response to spills in tundra, like we saw at the Live and Good spill. But because DEC has been unwilling to enforce this statute for several years, it has put a chill.
Mr. Lakosh?
Yes.
Can you please wrap up your testimony? We have quite a bit of other business in this committee.
Right. And it is, I shall. Thank you very much, Chairwoman. I'd like to remind you of the railroad spill in your district, and the need to have BAT respond to spills in the Susitna with ice in it. And what I'm basically trying to say is that The legislature is essentially taking administrative role here and approving illegally issued permits. That administrative function may be subject to appeal. There are several other bailouts that the legislature will have to do if DEC isn't strictly directed to clean up its act and provide the analysis of tech spill technologies that was mandated by law by two previous legislatures, which this legislature by a wave of a wand cannot reinterpret as a matter of law. So I encourage the committee to look at my recommended changes. They're not that far from RCAC's position or even DEC's position in using the technology conferences and an analysis procedure for breakthrough technologies. I suggest it be done on a semi-annual basis instead of every 5 years to be more consistent with statute. But I would like to answer any questions that the committee may have regarding spill problems in their districts and the chill that this has put on the response industry. The response industry has said to me, I've spoken to many manufacturers. They want to know that this...
Mr. Lopez, I need to remind you of your 3 minute time. Your 3 minutes is up. Can you wrap it up, please?
I'm sorry for taking the committee's time. Thanks for this opportunity to testify.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions for Mr. Lopez? Representative Curtula.
Thanks. Hi, Tom. My question actually goes around something that I think that you suggested, and that is the tractor tugs. If my memory serves me, you had brought the tractor tugs to the awareness of the industry in some cases and the department, and that ultimately that was adopted. Am I remembering right?
I'd love to take the credit for the new tractor tugs, Representative Curtula, but no, that was not my original action, but I did strongly support them, and I do strongly support the use of them tethered throughout Prince William Sound.
Well, no matter whose original idea it was, didn't you argued for quite a while to see those used, and ultimately that is what happened, am I right?
Yes, that is, Representative.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you very much for your testimony. Is there anybody else on teleconference that would like to testify on Senate Bill 343? Seeing none, I guess, is there anybody else in the audience that would like to testify? 3 minutes, please come forward, give us your name and affiliation for the record.
Thank you, Chairman Mastic, and I apologize for not signing up. I got here just a tad late. I am Susan Schrader with Alaska Conservation Voters, and I'm hoping that you do have a copy of our position paper in your packet.
We sure do, Sue.
Okay, great. I will keep this very short. We do believe that Senate Bill 343 will weaken the state's oil spill response laws. We believe that this bill will be a disincentive to the oil industry to spend the money needed for resource research and development on best available technology. And we also believe that this bill gets DEC off the hook for requiring best available technology. We fully acknowledge that the opinions of the attorneys that I work with differ from the Assistant Attorney General's opinion. I guess that's in part what the Supreme Court case was about, differing opinions. So I will simply leave it at that. We are opposed to this legislation. We think it does represent a rollback in the oil spill protection laws that this legislature a number of years ago passed, and we hope you will consider all viewpoints on this bill.
Thank you. Are there any questions, Representative Petula?
Thank you, Madam Chair. How would you have DEC determine what was best? If you could set that, how would you do it?
Through the chair, Representative Petula, I am sadly not the person to answer that question. As you know, I've testified before this Committee on a large variety of bills, and my knowledge of the details of oil spill planning and prevention is pretty scanty, so I'm sorry I can't answer your question.
Well, what I'm trying to grapple with is, if we have a standard that says the best, it seems inherently unworkable to me, because you're always running around trying to figure out what the best is. And then I go back, and it's somewhat circular, I think, but isn't the real problem of the performance standard ultimately anyway? Because if you don't have a good performance standard, even if you had the best technology in the world, you're not gonna meet your necessary requirements. Do you think I'm right about that? Any feeling?
Again, through the chair, I guess I would get back to what I understand the Supreme Court decision, and that is you're looking at kind of two lines of approach to determining the quality of your C plan. You're looking at meeting performance standards and planning standards, and then you're also looking at addressing this issue of best available technology. What we would like to see is that what's been referred to as the winnowing process, the alternatives analysis to determining best available technology, be kept in regulation, and that DEC be required to go through that process, which, in our belief, where this bill is taking DEC is simply saying, well, if an applicant comes in with a draft plan and it meets the planning standards, then hey, that's best available technology. It doesn't require DEC to go through the winnowing process that we feel would result in potentially a stronger, more protective plan.
One last question. Now, DEC is testifying they're not changing their regulations, that in fact what they're doing is meeting their regulations that are currently on the book. You don't think that's correct? You think that this bill actually allows them to get out of something that they currently do in regulation?
And through the chair, we believe that DEC, first of all, does not need to address the Lockish decision through statute. We believe that they have already started their regulatory process to address the court's decision. We would like to see that process continue. We do support the concept of a conference, whether it's every 5 years or every year, every 2 years, but we also believe that that should not be the end of determining best available technology, simply a conference between DEC and industry, that there has to be opportunity for public comment on whatever comes out of those conferences. So we think that DEC can address all of court concerns simply through the regulatory process.
Thank you.
Representative McGuire.
Okay. Well, I guess I'm a little confused now after that statement. What I want to know then is, did you support or did the League of Conservation of Voters support the regs that came out of the stakeholder working group, the negotiated rulemaking group? Did you support those regs?
Through the chair, Representative McGuire, I have tried over the last couple of weeks to determine who the environmentalists were on the stakeholder group, and I apologize to DEC because I've not checked with them, but nobody that I have worked with knows has come forward to say, yes, I was the environmentalist that sat at that group. So since ACV was just formed in 97, my organization itself did not take a role in that, so I really cannot speak to what the environmentalist position at that stakeholders group was.
Okay, just to follow up with the Madam Chair, that was my second question. Was I would assume any stakeholder panel, and then I'd like to have somebody from DEC answer the question if they could, would include naturally somebody who would represent your type of interest, and I'd like to know who that was. And then my final question then, so your problem isn't just with the bill before us, it's with the whole concept behind the regs, and then now implementing it into statute. Am I understanding that correctly?
Right. Through the chair, Representative McGuire, we do agree with the Supreme Court and their interpretation that DEC did not promulgate regulations coming out of that 97 stakeholders group that comport with the statute.
Thank you, Sue. Larry, did you want to come and forward again and answer Representative McGuire's question?
Yes, thank you, Representative McGuire, through the chair. The stakeholder group in 1997 included the regional citizens advisory councils. It included industry groups. The lead contact for the environmental community, as I recall off the top of my head here, was Patty Saunders. That represented a number of environmental organizations, and there was one other person that was her alternate on that group. I can't recall her name right now, but we can definitely get that for you. And there was other public, there were other participants, but all stakeholders were at the table.
Representative McGuire.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Actually, that answers my question. I just wanted it stated on the record that there was a representation by the environmental community.
Yes.
Thank you, Larry.
Thank you.
Okay, with that, Representative Crotula, I think, Larry, we have one more question for
Thanks.
You.
Thanks. Would there be any real impact by requiring the five-year conference, and by just mentioning them, rather, not even putting it in the bill itself, but by mentioning it explicitly in the intent statement? And this is something DEC has said it will do. It's something that obviously is not much of a requirement, and it's something that the RAC Act's asking you to do. Is there any real problem with putting it in the intent statement?
Representative Crotula, through the chair, I looked at the language as we came in today, and I don't think we have a problem with that. I think it's one of, I think what's been expressed today, it's one of timing and in terms of getting the bill out, but I think the proposal by the Prince William Sound RCAC that is in the packet today would not be a problem. We haven't reviewed that internally, but my first review of it here, just time to hearing, is it's not a problem, I don't believe, for us at all. I mean, we do believe in the BAT conference. We do believe in having that. We agreed to that process in 1997, and we think it is a very important and efficient way for the state to examine new technologies. Without that conference, we essentially do that on an individual plan review basis. And I would argue that there are benefits to this conference to industry and all parties in that doing a comprehensive review on a periodic basis allows us to identify technologies then that individual companies may not have to repeat. And we've got 120 facilities, and so I think there's an efficiency there by doing that, making the BAT review and moving in that direction.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
At this time, I'm going to close public comment for Senate Bill 343 and open it up for committee discussion. I guess in our packet there is a letter that was put in by a testimony of Kurt Rickson, Department of Environmental Conservation, and has a very, the last three pages, well, page three and four, he has like five points that refers back to the legislation that we have before us, and seems to me that it's pretty much an order, and I don't think it should cause this committee that much concern in its testimony from the DEC Deputy Commissioner. So I feel with this bill, it's going to answer some of the issues that the court ruling wanting the legislative body to clarify our intent, and I believe this legislation does that. And it's had hearings in the Senate, and we've heard from quite a few people today. And with that, I would entertain a motion.
Madam Chair, are we still? Thanks. Are we in discussion? Would you prefer it to be?
Yes, I just made my discussion.
And will you allow others, or do you want to wait?
Please, if you would like to.
Well, thank you. I would. After Exxon Valdez, I think that actually the BAT standard, the best available technology standard, was actually a compromise from requiring the industry to meet the best technology. I mean, it was such an intense reaction. I mean, it felt like someone had died. And I think that it was actually a compromise to come down from something that could have been required of the industry. So I also think that best available technology ends up being a circular standard, that if you don't have a good performance standard, it's not going to matter what kind of technology you have because it's going to be meaningless. And I think, as Mr. Dietrich testified, the converse is also true, that when you have great technology, or when you do a conference, when you share scientific information and you know what's available, you can also push your performance standard. We've heard a little bit of testimony about oil and broken ice when Representative Scalzi was chair, weren't you, of the Coastal Policy Council? And I worked, you were on it, on the CPC and served on it. We both dealt a lot with that issue, difficult issue. And I think that the industry and DEC are in an eternal balance of how do you meet a performance standard, how do you do what's reasonable, and we're in the middle of that. I think the Supreme Court's decision was correct on the language. I think that it looked behind the intent and tried to do the best it could, and that we're stuck in a difficult position because we don't want to stop everything from moving forward. But I know that none of us want to see another Exxon Valdez, God forbid, the industry included. So I have some real concerns about this legislation, and it's not really in me to just overrule a court case and say, go on your way. My biggest concern really, though, deals with the fact that I think that the Department of Environmental Conservation has very little resources right now. I think that they have excellent people and they do everything that they can, but I'm concerned about their future. Having heard all the testimony, though, and hearing the compromise that seems to be coming forward of at least putting the fact that we have this five-year conference and the intent, that would be what I would see coming out of this committee today, is at least explicitly mentioning the conference. I don't think it's a big deal, but I do see it as important to putting it right in the intent language that we want to see that conference held. That alone, I think, will help both sides. Mr. Dietrich's right, it's going to help the industry because you're not going to have DEC looking at every single plan saying, what am I going to do now, and going off. So, anyway, thank you for the latitude to mention my thoughts.
Thank you, Representative Petula. Are there any other comments from committee members? Or
well,
Representative Green.
Since we're putting things on the record, I would like to pose a hypothetical. We heard earlier that the additions on this bill to guide perhaps another litigation and help the Supreme Court understand what the legislature meant when we say what we mean is that they have the authority to determine what is the best available technology, because there's no way in statute we could stay up with it. So it's going to be extremely difficult in regs. It'll even be very difficult in newsletters because it's constantly changing. But I pose a hypothetical when they were talking about the fact that the maze in here should be musts. Must find that the technology meeting the response is established and is the most best available, that the department must prepare findings and maintain a list of those technologies. That, to me, when you do a superlative like that, you almost force yourself into noncompliance, because as time moves on, what you just signed last month is probably already out of date. It's kind of like buying a PC. As soon as you buy it, you're walked off the floor, you're out of date. And I want to pose a hypothetical that by doing the musts, and they have the list, and the response organizations that we have them in Cook Inlet, we have them on the North Slope, we have them in Prince William Sound, as we should, and they have the absolute best available widget there is. It just came off the market, and here it is. And so we have an operator who has an incident, and zap, there goes the best available technology to that thing, and God forbid, we have another incident. Now, right away, incident number two, is in violation because they're not using the best available technology. It went north to take care of incident one. So right away you can see the dichotomy of problems that you're going to have when you say, we are going to insist that we have the best available technology. May, I think, is the only logical way we can go with an agency that is charged with that very they're charged with making sure that in the areas there is the best available technology. But to go beyond that, I think when you start to must them, A, we heard one attorney say, we on one hand are stepping beyond our bounds when we dictate things to the administration, and then turn right around in the same sentence, almost certainly in the same dialogue, saying we're derelict and not requiring this to happen from an administrative position. So, I mean, you either are going to have faith in the watchdog organization we have, or you're not. And if you do, then let them may. If you don't, try micromanaging, and you'll find yourself in the dilemma that they're in. So my point is that we have to get this going, we have to get permits going, and by putting things in the intent language, we know what does that mean. It helps the Supreme Court with another piece of litigation. Does that mean that there are agencies or groups out there waiting to pounce, or are we as Alaskans trying to prevent what happened in 89? I mean, on one hand, you want to make sure that, boy, I got an opening, I'm going to go after him, or we've got it on paper. The intent was right here because we got it in the language. That's not in statute. It just says that this is the intent. I think we're jousting at windmills, Madam Chairman. I think this takes care of what the Supreme Court found was missing. We should move it on and get it out of our way and go on about our business.
Thank you, Representative Green. Co-Chair Scalzi.
Yeah, I would concur with what Representative Green said from a practical application on the CERVS project that most of us local fishing vessels participate in throughout the state. We've been involved with that since the Exxon oil spill. And each year, we go through a practice, the vessels do, of picking up oranges or something that is supposed to symbolize an oil spill. And every year, there's some new change. And a lot of times, you actually go backwards. You find that what you did a couple of years ago may have been actually more efficient than this new technology, this new piece of machinery that comes out. So I see actually the opposite happening. At times, you find that what you did in the past may have actually been better. So the new technology isn't necessarily the best technology. And, of course, all these things are, as you said, shooting in the dark until you're faced with picking up oil again, because oranges can give you an idea, but they just don't cut it. So I think that I concur, trying to shoot at something that is very subjective. I think that we do need the latitude of having the may in there. With regard to what Representative Gratulo said about the referencing the meeting, and I think that's fine. I think that if it's part of the intent language of what the legislature wants to do, but certainly I think the bill is written fine the way it is, and I would support moving
that. Thank you. Well, I guess too on that point, we're not taking away anything. It says here the legislation must validate the existing regulations and preserve the approach used for making bat determinations as envisioned by the 97 task force. And it also, we have to sustain the same level of rigor for plans reviewed now practice and not diminish the existing response capability. And then the fifth one, it says here, the legislation must continue to support the ability to the department to evaluate new technologies and make bat findings. So I think with having said that, I would entertain a motion.
Madam Chair, I'd like to move to amend the bill.
I would object.
Okay, you want to hear the amendment?
You can hear the, I'd hear the amendment, but
thank you.
I'd probably object to accepting it.
Well, on page two of the bill, actually, the language that you just read, I think, is from DEC, but it's not in the bill itself. And I think it's very little to ask that we mention the conference itself. So I think at on page two, after line 21, I tried to fit in maybe more appropriate after line 17, actually. Just to add in the language that the regulations, and it's going to be somewhat conceptual, but that the regulations require a best available technology conference every 5 years, and the conference will identify best available technology in an orderly way. And that's straight out of what RACAC is saying. It's straight out of the regulations. I don't think it's going to cause anybody any problem, except it does seem to engender some goodwill on the part of RACAC and other groups. So I could stand corrected maybe by Mr. Mertz if that language isn't what was requested. That's it. So that's the motion, is to add that language in wherever it's appropriate. I guess I'd say it conceptually because the drafter might have a better place for it. So I move the amendment.
I object.
It was to say that the regulations require a best available technology conference every 5 years, and this conference will identify best available technology in an orderly way.
And what was the last part? I'm sorry.
Sorry, Joe.
We have the sponsors and staff. Is there anybody from
I can write it out. Let me write it out, too.
I believe that it's already in regulation, so I don't believe that it needs to be in the bill necessarily. It can be handled without putting it in the bill. Because it's already written in the regulation part. So I object. I'm going to have a roll call on the
If I might hand this over to Representative Green before you hold the vote, Madam Chair, so you can at least read it.
And it's already in regulation.
Yeah. Well, as the maker of the amendment, let me point out that we've got almost two pages of intent here. I mean, I'd be for taking it all out, frankly. But as long as we've got two pages of it, it seems very little to ask that we add in one sentence on a conference.
Well, Representative Krutula, I can understand your concern, and you've got a good motive there, but I think with the issue itself, it is answered in the regulation portion, and I don't believe we need to put it in the bill, so I will have a brief at ease. We have, okay, Representative Green. I know Krutula had put up her amendment and I objected. Did you have anything else to add to my objection? Okay. So I guess we have before us amendment number one.
But you were going to say roll call vote.
Yes, roll call vote. Secretary, can you please take the vote on amendment number one by Representative Krutula?
Representative Bate?
No.
Representative Chenault?
No.
Representative Green?
No.
Representative McGuire?
No.
Representative Seaver?
No, I'm not there.
Representative Casper? Representative Krutula?
Yes.
Representative Bassett?
No.
Representative Goldie?
Wait.
Yes, yes.
Okay, so the measure failed 7-1, and that brings us back to the original bill. Representative Green.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would move that we move CS for Senate Bill number 343 Resources from committee with individual recommendations and zero fiscal note.
Are there any objections to moving it out of committee? Hearing none, then Senate Bill 343, Resource, is moved out of committee. The next bill we're going to take up, due to time constraints, we're going to have a three-minute interval here. The next bill we're taking up is CS for House Bill 474. And that's the CRA, oh, yeah, CRA version. Representative Green? Do you have your staff here?
I don't see them, I think they're outside.
Okay.
Taking that east real quick?
Yes.
Madam Chair, we have a brief.
Brief, Representative Green?
Thank you, Madam Chairman, with your indulgence, I would like my chief of staff to carry the bill for me, and I'll be here to answer any questions.
Okay.
For the record, my name is Laura Ashay, I'm staff to Representative Joe Green, and I'm here to talk to you today about House Bill 474. The Anchorage Coastal Wildlife Refuge was created in 1988 by the state legislature. And I believe you have maps in front of you that show that it does run along part of the coastline and is adjacent to the municipality of Anchorage. In the Cook Inlet, it is a unique coastline because Fire Island actually protects this section of land from the movement of the ice in Cook Inlet. And so that does highlight how unique this is as a habitat for shorebirds, for coyotes, for other small animals in the area. What this bill does, it's very simple, it recognizes the fragility and the value of this section of land by requiring that legislative approval be granted before the state acquires or creates any new surface transportation right-of-ways through the refuge. And that actually sums it up. If there's any questions, I'd be happy to entertain them. I know we have, hopefully still, some folks online in Anchorage that are more closely involved with the refuge and could.
We sure do have people online, Laura. Is there any questions for Laura? Representative Green?
If I might add, one thing, someone, I presume that was you that has supplied us with this map, showing some alternate routes that have been proposed. And the one of most contention is the orange route that stays right at the bluff, right in the most critical of the habitats. And there is a gold route that actually goes inland as necessary to connect with other existing pieces of trails. And so it, A, would be far less expensive than trying to build one along the coast, and certainly would connect existing trails, which is one of the concepts that we have, is to try and bring neighborhoods, schools, and so on to allow them to utilize this. And most of all important is that it would stay out of those critical habitat areas and allow the view for everyone. The gold route, I am told, actually offers as much view of the inlet as the orange route because of the location being elevated. You can see more of the inlet for those who enjoy the inlet and want to start way up north and go all the way to Girdwood eventually. And I can understand some people wanting to do that.
Excuse me, Joe, just for clarification, which is the original trail here then?
Well, there isn't an original trail.
There is no trail and there's.
Well, that's the purpose, we want to prevent that because.
Okay, because I know there's Tony Knowles Coastal Trail.
Oh, that stops up here at the beginning of the map.
Okay.
And you can see where these two trails, they come up to the park up there, and they either start at the existing trail or at, there are two existing pieces that they could start at. And then they take off, and then there is also Trail South. And what was stated by Ms. Ashay was that there is this area that is scoured by ice every year, and the trail runs along that. Then there's the shielded area from Fire Island, where, which has allowed this saltwater marsh habitat to develop. And then as you get down toward the end, where the, on the right-hand side of your map where the legend is about where the old and new Sioux highways would come down. And there is scour again down there, and so consequently, there is an existing trail down there. It's just this section up here that is so critical, that we want to make sure that if there's going to be a trail there, that it actually is the least damaging. And so we're concerned about what's been happening.
With your bill, then, which one are you reflecting, then?
If there is to be one, we would, this, I mean, I think, and I think you'll hear, that the goal route would be better, simply because it stays away from the critical area. And it stays away from some home sites that are actually on top of the bluff there. There would have to be condemnation to get the trail on top of the bluff. There had to be habitat destruction if you went to the bottom of the bluff. I'm sorry, Tim.
Okay. I guess that clarifies it a little bit for those of us that aren't too familiar with Anchorage. Okay, Laura, thank you for your testimony. We're going to move on here to teleconference. We have, and I'd like to limit it to 3 minutes. We have at the Fairbanks LIO, Jesse Van Derzan. Jesse, are you online?
Yes, I am, Chair.
Yes, if you want to give us your name and affiliation and give us your testimony on House Bill 474, please.
Sure, I'll keep it brief. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Jesse Van Derzan, and I'm the executive director for the Alaska Outdoor Council, and sorry I couldn't be with you down in person today, and I appreciate the opportunity to testify by conference here. We just got done with our annual meeting. It was in Palmer this past weekend. We had about 24 member clubs there, represented by delegates, and they all voted unanimously to support the passage of House Bill 474. I wish that I could tell you that I'm the expert on this issue. However, I'm not. I've contacted several folks at AOC and tried to get them present here today. They were not able to attend. But I would like to mention that we have been working fairly closely with SARDA. They are probably online out of Anchorage there. Dave Adams has been one of their key folks. We've worked very closely with Dave on this particular issue and on the consideration of different routes. We actually did write a letter in support of the gold route at one particular point in time in this issue. And generally what our primary concerns are is that, one, any future access regarding trails or roads, if they are to be constructed, does not unnecessarily limit or impact existing uses, such as what you find at the refuge regarding waterfowl hunting. There's the Rabbit Creek Rifle Range there as well. And we wouldn't want any potential access to unnecessarily or negatively impact those existing uses that are already there. Furthermore, with regard to legislative oversight on this particular trail, I think the precedent is fairly clear. They created the refuge in the first place, and some of the parameters surrounding the refuge, certainly with regard to the oversight and approval of any changes to that particular refuge that may or may not impact habitat, existing uses, and so forth, they ought to have a say in that. House Bill 474 gives them that say, and for those reasons, we strongly support its passage. I'll limit it there, and I appreciate the opportunity to testify and appreciate your efforts on this legislation, and thanks, Representative Green, for bringing this issue forward again. I know it's been a long-standing issue with you, and we certainly appreciate your efforts. So I'll conclude with that.
All right, thank you. Is there any questions for Jesse? Hearing none, we'll move on to the Anchorage LIO. We have Jeff Lowenfeld. Anchorage LIO. Jeff, are you there?
Here, Madam Chair. Thank you very much for the opportunity to testify.
Okay.
My name is Jeff Lowenfeld, and I live on the bluff over the. Proposed coastal trail. I'm not here to testify with regard to the science, although I think there's some very compelling reasons why there should not be a coastal trail in the actual refuge itself. I'm not here to testify about the economics. I think there's also some very compelling reasons why a trail does not make sense in this particular area in terms of economics. I'm here to testify a little bit about the process. Those of you who know me, and I think most of you do, know that I've been involved in a number of permitting processes over the years, a number of NEPA matters over the years, and in fact, for 27 years, I've done quite a bit of permitting. This one seems to be the most unusual project that I've ever been exposed to. There has been a constant shifting of environment of proposals. Almost every time there's a public meeting, there is a new proposal that someone in the government has brought up. There is incredible levels of frustration at meetings, more frustration at some of these meetings than I've seen at anything that I've ever been involved in terms of permitting for the gas pipeline. There is a tremendous lack of trust as to the officials because of political gamesmanship which have been played. The name of the trail, the extension of the trail, comments by the governor that the trail will be down in the refuge, comments by the Commissioner of Natural Resources. There has been just extensive political games played with this particular piece of real estate. And as a result, what we have is a whole host of what I would call NEPA warts, warts that are would make the Elephant Man look like Robert Redford. It is absolutely unbelievable to me that public officials have gone about this process in the way that they have and exposed themselves and both sides, whether you're for or against the Coastal Trail, both sides to continuous and extensive and expensive litigation. I live on the bluff. I want this thing settled one way or the other once and for all. I'm tired of going to meetings and having people come up with new proposals, the latest of which, of course, is Chip Dennerline's fuchsia route. He says fuchsia, but that's not the proper way to pronounce the word. This is a route that he swore two or three weeks ago was the route that the Fish and Wildlife, Fish and Game Habitat Division was going to support. It was a route he testified on extensively. We have yet to see a map of that route. That is so typical of the way this process has been run. We've got government officials, according to Chip Dennerline, who are in total agreement, general agreement, I guess he said, with regard to this new fuchsia route. We've never seen it. We're the members of the public that are going to use this route. We're the members of the public for whom these agencies are supposed to be working. And yet we can't get a copy of the map that the Department of Fish and Game Habitat Division is working off of. There's something wrong with this process. There's something so wrong with this process that we're actually asking the state legislature to step back in. And no disrespect, that really is asking for something quite unusual. And with that, I'll end my testimony. We have a problem here. We have a cancer here. It needs to be cured. It needs to be watched. And the legislature, apparently, is the only group that can do so. And I would urge you to pass 474.
Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Lowenfels. Representative McGuire has a question.
Oh, Jeff, I don't have a question. I just have a comment. This is Representative McGuire, and as you know, many people that live in my district are profoundly affected by this, as well as Representative Green's district. And I've been following this and following the frustration. Not only have I had it my own self in trying to get information about various routes and how they continue to change. It's a moving target. But many of the people in my district have too, and I just wanted to offer my sympathy to you for that and let you know that along with Representative Green, I have been in touch with the Department of Transportation. One of the women in my district had such an awful response from DOT 2 months ago in her first effort at ever being involved in state government, and this is what she was exposed to. It was horrifying, the treatment by one of the Department of Transportation officials, and I actually called the commissioner into my office and spoke with him about it, and he has since issued her a letter of apology on behalf of the Department of Transportation. But I just wanted you to know it's not an isolated event, and I really believe that it's important that we have this second layer, just as you mentioned, although I would disagree with your comments about the legislature. However, that said, I think it's really important that we include this extra layer of representative process, because certainly the process has not worked. In my opinion, it's one of the most dramatic abuses of government I've ever seen.